evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net meets weekly on 146.955, the repeater, the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. Is there any emergency or prey traffic at this time? Alrighty. Listen again. Is there any emergency or prey traffic? Please call W2TTT. Okie doke. Very good. A little quick on the microphone, so pardon me. Alrighty. Well, welcome everybody. The technical net is about a conversation, dealing with amateur radio, electronics, electricity, computers, telecommunications, things in our society that do those things, things, the ways we apply them, especially through amateur radio, but not necessarily. Talk about space a little bit sometimes, talk about emergency response a little bit. God knows we've had some instances. I'm hoping to hear some of those stories tonight, what people actually did, and we had a little bit of a story or two last week, and I'd look forward to hearing some more on that topic. I'd also like to hear about microcontrollers, antennas, emergency preparedness. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and you know, I'm just kind of curious what people have done to be ready for various contingencies. For those who don't know, there was a credible threat today. The president was briefed on that credible threat, and it involves one or more trucks that are disappeared from Kansas City with some folks who've been identified associated with them. That's always exciting. Not really, anyway. So, with that all in mind, let's move on. The way we carry out our conversation here is we check in an orderly way by call sign group with our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, both, because you're encouraged to have current questions and comments, or none of the above. In fact, we encourage you to check in even if you don't have a question or comment. You might ask why that is. Well, the reason is because sometimes by your checking in, you might find yourself to be an unwitting resource for the net. And just because your experience level is not where you think it should be, doesn't mean that you couldn't become a resource when a topic comes up. So, let's check in even if you do not have a question or a comment. One other little minor but very critical point is that you do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association to check into this net. We welcome your check-in, irrespective of your club affiliations. Again, this is a service of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association and supported by the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club through the use of their repeater, but we really would like to have your conversation as part of the dialogue. So feel free to check in. So, with no further ado, let's get the whiskey stations. Please call W2TTT with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above.
W1AU, Bill, comment.
Gotcha, Bill. Thank you very much. Any other whiskeys?
W2JEK, two comments.
Ooh, very good. Don, W2JEK, welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no comments or questions.
Good evening, Charlie. Very good. Any other whiskeys?
W2CH, Ray, just a comment. Good evening.
Wow. Everybody's full of commentary tonight. Excellent. Good. Any other whiskeys? Okay. I have Bill, I have Don, I have Charlie, and I have Ray. That's excellent. All right, let's go on to the alpha stations, the often maligned alpha stations. They tend to go either first or last. So I'm going to put them in the middle tonight. Please call WTTT. I know why Nico's not here tonight. Nico's either, I think he's getting ready for his twin son bar mitzvah. I think that's this weekend. Excellent. Certainly adds a celebratory tone to the otherwise mournful weekend. So that's good. Alrighty, let's see. Any November stations, please call WTTT.
This is N2OEL, what comment?
Noel, that's awesome. Thank you. Any other Novembers?
This is NS2K, no comment at this point.
Good evening, Jim. Alrighty. Any other Novembers? Okay, Jim, I do have a question for you. I'll even tell you what it is. What software rev are you using for your Flex and your Flex 5000? And do you have a configuration file? I think you have a dual receiver and auto tuner, which is the same as my configuration, but I was wondering if perhaps you could describe your configuration, which software you're running at this point, including any auxiliary software, not just the SDR stuff, and we can save that for later in the net, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that I was looking for that, and if you could send me your config file, at least for the Flex software, that'd be useful. Anyway, with that in mind, let's move on. Do we have any other Novembers? Okay. How about Kilo 2?
K2AMI, Tony, with a comment later.
Tony, very good. Got you. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2ZC, no questions, no comment. Okay.
Very good, Dave. Good hearing you. We haven't heard you since... it's on this net in a while, but it was nice to see you at the Round Pole Rally. Thank you for your help again. Maybe you did check in for the Round Pole Rally. No, I mean, after the rally. No, actually, I think it was a Wednesday night that I worked here. Okay, that's good hearing you. My QRP friend, Steve Leonardi, who lives down the street from Don, made a really cool contact or two recently. And he's getting out really, really well these days with his 750 mighty milliwatts. Anyway, a station, he builds all his stuff too. He's based on kits. It's really cool. Alrighty, any other kilos? Maybe kilo twos, probably kilo twos. Alright, all the rest of the kilos, it's your turn.
KO2, okay. Good evening, Gordon. No questions or comments at this moment.
Evening, Bennett. Good to hear you. Any other kilos?
KC2ZMA, Marco. I have a comment, some information I'd like to share.
Marco, thank you very much. We will definitely welcome you in due time. We have a lot of chatting tonight. Okay, guys, get a cold drink, turn up the volume, be able to run to the restroom and still hear the net, or grab an HD. This could be a while. Any other kilos?
KD2AIK, Michael, with a question.
Hey, Michael. That's Kilo Bravo 2 Alpha India Kilo, is that correct?
Kilo Delta 2 Alpha India Kilo.
Oh, even better, Kilo Delta 2 Alpha India Kilo. Very, very good, Michael. We got your question noted. All right, let's see. Any other kilos? Okay, just for anyone's reference, this net is also available via Echolink using the I forgot Jim's call. That's embarrassing. I'm just drawing a blank.
USJ.
Thank you. Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet, L on EchoLink. Kilo 2, Foxtrot, Juliet, dash L for Lima. You can always check in that way too. What's nice about that is you can also send a text message. I'll be checking into that shortly, so never fear. That's a way to raise your hand if you're having trouble getting in, or if you want to make a comment, or if you're away and just want to listen to that, you can always check in that way. Whatever call signs I see on during the net, I add to the net roster. So that's cool too. So even if they're not, you're not in an RF position, you still can get credit for the net that way. Alrighty. So I'm gonna be a little pushy here on setting the agenda. So we have a question from a new ham. That's Michael. We have Tony with a comment, and I always wait, make Noel wait, so I'm going to not have him wait. So we're going to do those three first, and then we'll kind of fill in the rest. So if you don't mind, guys, that's what I'm going to do. If someone else is short time, let me know after the first question's answered. We'll square that away if someone's got a short time issue. So with that in mind, Michael, KD2AIK, welcome to Amateur Radio. W2TTT, K2BAR.
W2TTT, KD2AIK. Thank you very much. And my question has to do with RF grounding. I'm setting up my first high-frequency station, and I'm going to be setting it up on the second floor of my house. And I'm hearing a lot of conflicting things about RF grounding. Some people don't believe in it. Some people say it's necessary. And I really don't have any place on the second floor of my house to ground the rig to, and I was hoping to get some comments or information, any help regarding this whatsoever.
Okie doke. Boy, this is this is going to be interesting. So you're going to be operating at the 100-watt level into what kind of antenna? Let's start there.
Understood. I have plans on putting up an OCF dipole at about 35 feet in the air in an inverted V. I have no plans on using a balanced dipole with a ladder line. I'm going to use the OCF with 50-ohm coax. 100 watt is correct, and the rig I'm going to be going with is going to be the ICOM 7410.
Wow. The 7410. Very nice radio. Well, good for you. That's a nice toy. I have a 746 Pro, which is its predecessor, and that's definitely an improvement over a really good radio. I'll tell you that right now. All right, so let me just ask a question. Are you going to have some sort of line isolator in the coax anywhere at all, either in the shack or below the feed point? You're going to have some sort of balance thing somewhere along that line?
To be honest with you, that's something that I haven't worked out yet, and I'm open to hear anything that anybody has to say.
Well, boy, this is a controversial subject. A couple of thoughts come to mind since you're on the second floor. If you can put a ferrite core set wherever the antenna requires, and also at the back of the radio, that's probably a really good idea. Having said that, you asked about RF ground in specific. You could, and you might find it, depending on the physical placement of your radio, you might find it interesting to run quarter wave radials to the bands of operation, especially the lower ones, from the back of your radio or from your common grounding point if you have an entry point, just down and around wherever you can, just to provide that kind of RF ground. In addition, you should consider at least grounding the AC side of your power supply. I'm less convinced about grounding the DC side, meaning connected to the household ground or to an earth ground. I'm less convinced of that. So I would start with those two things. Keep your RF off to the outside of your coax by every means possible. And you might consider, at least for 40 and 80, some sort of radial device coming off your entry point or off the back of the radio if it's like near a window or something. But, you know, that's what I would try to do. In fact, I would try to not do that at first to see how the RFI situation is. If you have RFI after you do the basics, then add those. If you don't, well, all the better. And try to do it maybe as an improvement, but I'm not so sure it really matters. Off-center fed dipoles often have a ground field, but not always. So, let's see. Who else wants to comment on this? Because I know there are people who've played with these more than me. W2TTTKTBAR.
Yeah, that's okay.
I knew somebody would jump in. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I'm probably far from the ideal person to comment on this, but I would think by its very nature an offset-fed dipole would have RF on the shield on many frequencies, not all frequencies, but at least certain frequencies. And at that point, I would say that you really, really do need a balance of some sort to make sure that it's, you know, differential mode and not common mode. You know, there's nothing on the outside of the shield, as it were.
Yeah, and that can be accomplished with a bunch of ferrites as the coax comes out of the back of the radio for, like, the first foot. The big ones cost a lot of money. The little ones don't. You can use a little piece of Teflon coax, which will carry plenty of power. In fact, as a jumper for that purpose. But, yeah, you want to keep as much RF off that coax. If the antenna design allows for a balance and also a ferrite coaxial type balun where you just wrap it around the coax just below the feed point, all the better. That will keep RF from coming down the coax. But you also want to make sure that you choke it off at the radio itself too. I mean, there's all sorts of opportunities for mischief there. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Victoria.
Hello.
I have a RadioWorks RF line isolator at the off-fed dipole that I'm using, and the coax I have to use, I was using before on 5RV, so it has approximately 2 feet of ferrite. Since it was already assembled, I just hung it up there. So I got one heck of a choke at the feed point there. And I stuck, it's been much quieter than my previous Alpha Delta DXCC, much quieter than my previous D5RV, which I hate. Back to that, Antulia.
Okay, so which antenna are you actually running?
RadioWorks Carolina Wyndham 40.
Okay. So you're running a Carolina Wyndham 40, and is that extra line isolator right below the one that they provided that you added? Is that what happened here?
Actually, they provide a line isolator, which is there, and my extra, I had some 67 feet of Mini 8 that I got from Gene KJI, and on that, from a previous antenna, I had just approximately 2 feet of the big ferrite. They're each about 3/4 inch long, 1 inch long, whatever that. And they were put in a tube made out of shrink wrap and tape and all bit. And I didn't feel like taking it apart, so I just hooked that up there. And it was so heavy that I suspended the choke with its own rope to the top, and the antenna is being suspended by a rope. If this thing ever falls on my head, I'm in big trouble. Extranet into Ilya.
Okay, so this extra 2 feet of line isolator that you added into the coax is right below the one that came with the Carolina Wyndham antenna, right?
You are correct.
Okay. And you're finding the antenna to be quieter and stuff like that. I have a DXDD, which is a trap 8040 dipole, and it's okay. I bought it due to an operational error on my part. I had left an antenna tuner home, and I didn't want to spend the money on the way to the Naval Academy Merit Badge Jamboree on a tuner, and it was cheaper to go buy an 8040 antenna. And that did the trick, and when I got home, I threw it up here. And that's that, because it fits my weird lot. Alrighty, well, very good. That's good. Anybody else? Okay, Michael, so what you may want to consider, since you like these off-center fed thingies, is look at the Carolina Wyndham or the Carolina Wyndham 40 if you don't have the space for the one that's big enough for 80 meters, God forbid 160. And if you outfit it similarly to what Noel did, you will have, shall we say, a relatively clean RF environment and a decent antenna.
W2TTT KD2AIK, very helpful. The specific antenna I had in mind was the Buckmaster OCS dipole up to 80 meters. But it, I would think it's probably similar to the Carolina Wyndham.
Yeah, the Carolina Wyndham or Wyndham 40 is a design that many guys on this repeater have, or on this club, I should say, have built and been very happy with. So, including, I think Tony had one, and I believe I know K2ZO had one and loved it. So you might want to consider that instead. The Carolina Wyndham is a pretty awesome antenna. So give that some thought, because, you know, others have had RFI problems and also noise problems. So especially if you're in a multifamily dwelling environment or a lot of closely spaced houses, it's really a nice antenna from a quietness viewpoint.
KD2AIK. Sounds like an idea.
Carolina Wyndham. And you can look up, there's a bunch of vendors of them. I mean, there's the Carolina Wyndham, but there's plenty of others. So look at those. They're pretty cool. Alrighty. Our next is a comment from K2AMI.
Gordon and the Baronet, K2AMI here. Just want to remind everybody about this coming up, upcoming weekend. Saturday and Sunday is the VRRL, I know it's called the sweepstakes, but it's a VHF contest. Barrow will be operating from up at Colson Mountain, which is a old Nike base site called now called Nike Park up in Orangetown. And we'll be running 2 meters, 6 meters, 440 and 220 with multiple towers, hopefully, and large antennas. We welcome anybody to listen in and try to make contact with us, and if you can't come up to the site, it's not too hard to find. Matter of going up Route 303 past the new Lowe's hardware store up there, which is on the left. But on the right side, you look for Spruce Street. Make a right turn up Spruce Street, work your way up to the top of the hill. You'll get there. More details are available if we have to go that way. So we will be loading a garage at about 8:30 on Saturday morning at the Barra Garage, setting the towers up at about 10 o'clock. And then getting on the air by 2 o'clock and operating through the day and night, most of the night, to about 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Then we'll have to take it all down and put it all away. Any questions, come on back to K2AMI. But right now, over to Ned.
Fine. Anybody want to ask Tony a question on this one? Well, I'm just going to point out that it is kick-ass fun to operate a VHF contest. Consider it. It really is a lot of fun. And we hope you will participate. I'm going to try to get there for a few hours on Saturday evening. I've got some other things to do later, so I can't stay much past about 8 o'clock. But I'm going to try to get up there maybe about 4:30, and I have to be out of there by about 8, I figure, thereabouts. So, that's pretty cool. Anybody else?
WHCAI checking in with no questions, no comments. Over.
I got you, Tom. Thank you very much. Who is the station?
2AMI with one more comment.
Sorry.
Don't have any expensive or sideband equipment. We'll be operating on FM also. And from up there at the mountain, handy talking can be heard in this area. This area is called FN20. The grid crew is called FN20. But write down the frequencies of 146.580, and that's simplex with no tone. And mark down the also 446.000. Again, simplex with no tone. Possibly if you got 220, mark down 223.500. Simplex with no tone. Find us on the FM band. You won't be there all the time. One of our main operators will be Noel, who's on frequency tonight, and we'll try to keep him going. Probably won't start early with FM, but it will be on many of the hours during the contest. So if you don't hear us once, come back later and give a shout. We'll be listening much more than we'll be calling for contacts. So we use those frequencies, 146.58, 446.000, and 223.500. And call us, C2VAR. Roger, back to net.
Hey, very good, Tony. Anybody have any more for Tony?
W2CH.
W2CH, go.
Actually, I just thought Gordon, I'd say what I was going to say in my comment about the contest, which was brought up, and we will be on here from home on the band this weekend most of the time. And look forward to it. I just thought I'd comment from this side of the river about that here to you, Gordon. W2CH.
Just don't comment to me. Comment to everybody, Ray. And you have. So that's great. That's absolutely super. VHF contest is a lot of fun. Really, really is. Alrighty. Trying to think here. I guess one more on this topic. Anybody else?
Victoria?
Mr. Noel, it's all yours.
Well, my plans were, I got the generator loaded. I got the fiberglass pole, the 4-foot pole, tied together in the middle. One, actually have about 10 of those. Anyways, I planned to put up a triple band antenna, leader 22440. I intend to set up the radios rather early. Just with my bum hand, I'm not going to be helping pull up towers and stuff. So we'll probably be out pretty early. I'm just going to leave them on. Other people will come in and sit at this place when I go to lunch or whatever. That's William.
That sounds great. That sounds wonderful. Alrighty. What's really cool about the VHF contest is that you make a lot of contacts on FM, you make a lot of contacts on single sideband CW, and increasingly there are stations making contacts on weak signal exotic modes like PSK31 or JT65 or some of these other crazy modes. Does anybody have any experience, or at least it's not experience, put their ear closer to the ground, is exactly what people are doing for either scheduled contacts using exotic modes or random contacts using exotic modes. Anybody have any info on that? WTTTK2BAR. Okay, we're going to have to bring that subject up another day. All right, very good. Any other comments to either Tony or Noel regarding the contest?
If you bring those comments up another day, it'll be past the contest, won't it?
Perhaps. Okay. Noel, it's your topic. You had a topic you wanted to raise. And to OEL, WTTTK2BAR.
Well, you're not going to find this humorous, but my topic was I'm intending to bring the motorhome to the contest with the generator, a two-burner stove, and I was wondering if anybody thought about lunch back to that.
Tony, Jim, in that order.
It was turned over to K2AMI. Thoughts about lunch are, if you really get hungry, bring your own lunch. Lunch will be provided somehow by the Barra Group, either with hero sandwiches or pizza or something of that order. It will not be a gourmet contest lunch. So if you don't like that, bring your own lunch. Doesn't hurt. Tastes good, too.
Okay. Jim, did you want to add anything to that?
And that's okay. Yeah, I understand that Bruce's wife will be doing a lot of the catering on that, and it'll be somewhat casual. We've got a standard platter at one point, pizza and/or whatever. There's a nice little deli place down at the bottom of the hill that we can use. But I'm thinking, other than that, that we'll have the coffee maker and some other snacky type foods and stuff. So, in between meals and overnight, there will be at least some stuff provided. But if there's something specific that anybody wants, it might be a good idea to bring it. And that's okay.
That sounds excellent, Jim. Okay, very good. Well, I can't stay on the overnight this year, at least I'm not anticipating being able to. And, but I am going to come around before dinner and leave after dinner, but I'm good for about the best part of 4 hours. And 9/11 is going to be taking up a lot of my time, as well as church on Sunday, so this is just one of those crazy weekends. I'm kind of curious as to how activity is as a function of weather and the fact that it's 9/11. I'd be very curious as to how that settles out, but September's always a lot calmer than others, certainly always calmer than June. Everything's calmer than June. But more importantly, it's, occasionally in some areas, January can actually be busier than June. Not June, than September, but in recent years that has not been the case. Mostly it's June, September, January in that order of activity level, but every so often you get a January where everybody goes all out. Anyone else on the subject of the September VHF contest, this call? All right, well, thank you very much for bringing all that up. All right, let's see. W1AU, it is your turn.
Well, mine's pretty simple. Just a general reminder that September is preparedness month. You should be prepared for hurricanes. I guess we already did that one. And that as a second issue, 1.4 million people in San Diego area are without power right now for some unknown reason. It seems to be the lines going in have been either overloaded or severed, or they didn't pay their bill. Who knows? K2BAR, W1AU.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that the last part about not paying their bill was a joke, but hoping that it's overload and not some form of malicious act. That would not be good. Alrighty. Anybody have any comments on Bill's observations?
Yeah, I have a question. Did anyone watch the president's speech this evening?
It's a little off topic, Tom, but I guess you are talking about national disasters or national preparedness. That comes next November, but we'll leave that alone. All right, moving right along. If Bob was here, Javits, he would remind everyone to charge their batteries. And National Preparedness Month actually has a number of measures, including just getting your own contact information in order, getting your family plan in order, maybe renewing your go kit before the winter, kind of go from a summer go kit to a fall winter kind of go kit. So it's time to think about that, and the like. So do keep that in mind. Those are all good things to do. Anybody have any comments? Okay. Our next commentator is W2JEK. Go right ahead.
K2BIR in the group that...
Don, did your radio go goofy? Okie doke. All right, let's try this.
$10.
MA.
We'll have the new general class exams ready. Anybody that wants to take the general? And I have the tech and the extra class exams as well. So I'll be all set there. And next comment, is I was with the Red Cross last Friday riding around while they were doing the disaster assessment. One thing, this crew of two gentlemen from the Red Cross had a GPS unit that they were using to guide them around. One fellow was from Missouri and the other fellow was from Ohio. And we were fortunate, we had a car that had two cigar lighter outlets, if you want to call them cigar lighters or cigarette lighter outlets. So we didn't have any power problems. We had one for this GPS and I had one that I plugged my radio into. But I think if you're outfitting a go kit, it might be a good idea to have a splitter for a single. You run into a car that has a single cigar outlet. You could might want to have a splitter that would handle two devices. I think Radio Shack or some of these computer stores sell these kind of a thing. So that was my other comment. So that back to that W2JK.
Yeah, Don, we didn't get your first comment. We did get your second comment, and that's very thoughtful. We'll get back to you on the first topic in a minute. But the second topic, you're absolutely right. You find out sometimes that you'll get into a car, and they have a splitter, and it's all in use, so you're cascading splitters. So at the risk of either popping the fuse or whatever, sometimes I find it very useful to take a small, let's say 7 or 12 ampere hour battery, acetyl lead acid, along with my, 25 or 50 watt transceiver, and run it off that, but, just strap it across the cigarette lighter gizmo, preferably on the splitter that Don mentioned, so that the high current requirements of transmitter absorbed by the local battery and not at the other end of the cigarette lighter fusing and wiring. That allows you to put more stuff out there, especially this high power stuff, such as transmitters. So that's another technique to put in as well. That's very good. Anybody have any follow-ups for Don on topic two?
Who am I?
Hey, Tony.
On what you just said, Gordon, if you're going to put a little lead acid battery across a cigarette lighter, and that's going to be in parallel with a car battery, is that really going to work? Which battery will you be draining from for the car use? Which battery will you be draining from your use?
That's a really good question, and the answer is, to some degree, per thevenin's, both. But because the resistance will be less from the local battery, you will drain more current from the local battery than you will the car battery.
Now my comment is, what will the car be draining from?
Will the utilities in the car, computers and windshield wipers and things of that nature, while the car is running, depends upon its own car battery. But if you have another battery there, will that somehow be draining simultaneously?
W1AU.
Go ahead, Bill.
Tony, this is a common one. Cars aren't 12 volts. Cars are 14.5, 14.7. So the car's generating 700 watts at that 14 volts, and it's going to be charging its battery and any other battery that's put in there. If you were to be silly enough to have your battery depleted to, say, 6 volts, then you'll probably pop the little fuse, which is a maximum rating of 120 watts or about a 10-amp fuse, and then you'd have another problem.
Thank you, Bill. That's a good comment about the being charged by the car generator. Of course, that would happen that way also. Okay. I just want to point out some things that I saw, and I'm glad you corrected them.
Okay. Anybody else on this topic?
KP2ZMA.
Marco, go ahead.
There's only one problem with that, too, that I figured out. When I used to do roadside, I used to do Mercedes-Benz roadside, and I had a jump box. And those car jump boxes, I would charge them from the cigarette lighter. But when I would shut the engine off, some cigarette lighters are always live, even with the key off. Certain, like, German cars do that. So you'll be backfeeding the car, and be throwing power back into the car, and sometimes leaving things alive. And the control units will get, like, freaked out and not know what to do. And you would drain the jump box. And sometimes it might drain the main battery, too, those more expensive cars. But I've noticed, like, you could actually backfeed right through a cigarette lighter. Doing it that way, to go through a cigarette lighter. Back to that.
Okay, well, I'm thinking a little more practically here. Number one, you're doing this while getting in and out of the car, continuously running, you're doing continuous mobile work. So either the alternator is charging your little 12-volt sealant acid, or, you know, the amount of backfeeding that's going on is pretty minimal because it's not for any kind of long duration. If you're really worried about it, you can unplug it. The other thing you can do, if you're really worried about it, is you can put a diode in the line so that the secondary battery doesn't backfeed the cigarette lighter, and that would solve the problem. And there you go. So, but good points all around. Good points all around. Don, you had a first question, I believe, or a comment about your test session, which kind of you dropped out. We actually thought you disappeared. Then you came back as you finished up that. So could you repeat that?
Okay. They're having a test session, a DE test session, on Friday, September 16th at 7 p.m. at the high school. We'll be giving all the tests. I have the new general access. I have the tech and the extra class. And the test fee is still $15, and I'll need one form of photo ID or two forms of non-photo ID. We'll be in classroom number 123, which is right inside the door that faces the street on the back of the building on the easterly side of it. And if anybody has any questions, you can contact me or either by the phone or email or even now if you want to use the net. Back to net, W2JEK.
Okie doke. Comments for Don?
No, but I got a comment on the previous subject of two batteries.
Sure, go ahead.
This is Antonio. He came up with me before because we were going camping a lot. And I'm going to tell you how they used to do it. On my camper, they put about a 30-amp dual diode. The alternator feeds the the diode that was in a heat sink, and there are two of them. One feeds the car battery, one feeds what they call the house battery, the one for the, when you're camping. It fried in my van, and both of them, everything was shorted together. So I replaced it with 105 amp hour. Since my alternator is probably not good for that, I don't think the alternator will ever fry the battery. In my blue van, we had a different thing. We had a, under the seat, there was 160 watt, 2 meter amplifier. And to feed that, I had, and also the camping, I had two 115 amp hour deep cycle batteries in a box for the camping. And what we did on that one was set up the way the police and the fire do. We simply had a relay under the seat, a big honking 400 amp relay that was wired up to the ignition, and every time you turned the ignition on, the two batteries went in parallel. I could also, I had a little switch down there that I could self-jump. If I pushed a button, the house battery would jump the car battery. And, of course, as soon as you turned the ignition off, both batteries were by themselves. Since it was wired with, I think, 4-gauge or 2-gauge wire, we didn't have a problem with the wiring burning up if the batteries had been depleted, say, foolishly to 6 volts, which had never happened because my inverter shuts off to 10.8. The third thing, if you go to the PowerWorks website, there's this neat little thing that you can set up to provide voltage at any particular voltage. And it's recently on the 12-volt DC Yahoo group, there was a comment made that if you were going to charge a battery or run a radio and you wanted to start when you turned on the engine, you would set the voltage in this little PowerWorks relay, which costs $60, to 13 volts. When you start the car, your auxiliary battery would be charged directly through this, and I believe it has a 20-amp capacity. When you shut off the vehicle, it's disconnected. Back to that, N2OEL.
And so you're using that auxiliary battery, you know, stand alone when the vehicle is powered off. Is that correct?
In all cases, use the auxiliary battery standalone when the vehicle is powered off. So this way, if you happen to be out in the woods, and you are talking on your radio too long or running whatever. In my case, VXYL runs the TV, and I run the computer, and, you know, this way you can always start the vehicle. It's unlikely that both systems would go at the same time, and either with the diode or with the relay. Now, the diode was the old one, the old-fashioned one, up until, I guess, 95, because my motorhome's a 92. The relay is the more modern one because you don't waste a lot. I think the relay is like 6 watts. With the diode, if you get the 0.7 volt drop and you're pushing, you know, 20 amps into each of those batteries, all of a sudden you start figuring 20 amps times 0.7 volts, and you're getting 30 watts. The 105 amp hour, or I should say 105 amp dual diode that I got to replace the old one that fried, it's got a humongous heat sink because it dissipates a lot of heat. In my case, I left it that way because the whole system was set up and it doesn't pay to mess with something that works. So I did improve it to the modern version. Back to that, N2OEL.
Okay, very good, Noel. Anybody else? You just don't bring a 2kW or a 3kW generator and be done with it? No, just kidding. All right, very good. Well, thank you. Let's see. We got Don, we got Bill, we got Ray. Did you make your comment? I'm sorry, and I know we have Marco lurking out there, too. And I have my question to NS2K. So, Ray, did you make your comment in full? W2CH, W2TTT, KTBAR. Okie dokie. I guess he has. Okie doke, KC2ZMA, Marco, your comment, sir. WTTTT K2VAR.
K2VAR, this is KC2ZMA.
Yeah, make mine's quick comment. Anybody interested in Morse code learning, especially the newcomer Michael, I've been using it myself. It's pretty neat. I've been doing a lot of, I've been Googling, if you Google basically W1AW code practice files, and you can get MP3 files. But I've noticed on my iPhone, you know, I did it on my iPhone, and you can actually stream the MP3 code practice files, and basically just put it on, you can do it on your iPhone, iPad. I'm not sure if it works on Android. I haven't tested that out yet. But and you can just stream the audio files, Morse code audio files, and instead of downloading it to like an MP3 player, instead of putting it on CD and putting it in your car and all that, you can just stream it portable, basically off your iPhone or your iPad. So, and I've been using it a lot. It's pretty interesting. Because it actually uses QuickTime Player, which is part of Apple, and it's been working pretty good. I've been using that a lot. Just thought I might share that because it'd be a nice portable way, you know, to learn more off of Morse code instead of staying by the computer and clicking the file. So, or if you don't have a radio that actually could receive the W1AW transmissions or have a bigger antenna or so. And I just thought that would be pretty neat to share that with everybody. It's working out pretty good. I've been using an iPhone with the headphones, or even with the internal speaker of the iPhone, it'll just play the audio file right out. And just, it's been working out pretty good. I just thought I might share that. And I'll give it back to Matt. This is KC2ZMA back to Matt.
Very good. Was there someone who wanted to make a comment about that? Hey, Marco, could you just repeat where we would get these streaming files from? What's the location and the like?
Yeah, sure. If you just Google W1AW code practice, it should be the second one. It says code practice files. And you just click on that, and you go on the bottom, I believe. It's going to bring you right to the AWRL website in the code practice file section. And if you go all the way down, you can get all the 20 words per minute, 25, all the way to 5 words per minute, which is what I use. I use less. And it gives you the latest ones. I think you will also probably see the ones they recently put on there, too. But just Google W1AW code practice files.
Okay. Very, very good. So Google W1AW code practice files, and away you go. That's wonderful. Anybody have any follow-on? Great. Okay. Let's see. Before I get the answer to my question, and some general roundtable conversation. Any other stations wanting to check in or comment on the net, please call W2TTT K2BAR.
K2BAR? AJ4WD, Rachel, no questions or comments.
Evening, Rachel. Very good. Anybody else? Okie doke. Anybody else with any other topics before we move on? Anybody want to add a new topic or something like that? Okay, just want a general admonition, you know, get yourself squared away before the weekend. Come home from work tomorrow night and pack up a few things and just make sure your go-kit's all up to snuff and batteries are charged, things like that. In fact, that'd be a good thing to do before you go to bed tonight. That way they're all charged tomorrow. 9/11, 10th anniversary, storms are raging. Yeah, not exactly, you know, a zero-sum game in the fun and frolic department here. So, might be something to think about. So, NS2K, I guess my first question, which I did ask you, I'm going to belay that one for a second and ask you a second question. Is your Flex going to be in use during the VHF contest? And then from there, we can discuss configurations. But I'd love to know if you're going to, if you consider ever doing that. NS2K, K2BAR.
And that's okay. Well, I did actually bring it to the field day, and Steve and I and some others had had some fun with it. I'm not sure if I want to bring it up where the I don't know. We'll have to see where the weather has been pretty funky, or predicted to be pretty funky. I'm hoping that the 30% chance of rain really means no rain at all. I really am hoping for that, but we'll see as we get a little bit closer to that. In any case, I think you were going to ask what version of software. I have not done the recent upgrade. It's the version that was out in June that, I'm still using. And I am at this point not using any of the other co-applications, as it were, although there's some things that I'd really like to do at some point.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, that makes it a lot simpler to figure out. I am always curious about that kind of stuff, as you know. And we can see how we're going to do this going forward. It'd be really cool during a VHF contest, to say the least. But I understand about the weather. I couldn't help but wonder why not, or wonder if you were. I should say I knew why not if it was going to rain. And which accessories do you have in yours? Do you have the tuner and the second receiver? I don't think you have the VHF-UHF converter.
Oh, gosh, yes. No, I do have the VHF module as well. And I've got the little knob thingy.
Ah, so I have another question, if you don't mind. Can you operate, if you have the second receiver, and I'm assuming you do. You do, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so if you have a second receiver, can you simultaneously be on 2 and 432 or 2 and 10, let's say?
2 and 10, I believe, yes. 2 and 432 at the same time, I don't think so. Maybe somebody else could be able to answer that.
No, I don't know. I'll have to call the support line or put it up on a board. That's a very good question, if I may say so myself, because it occurred to me that if you're a satellite operator, you might want to operate the uplink and the downlink on receive simultaneously. But listen on the input while you're also listening on the downlink. But on the other hand, if you're a VHF contester, you might want to be on both bands pretty quickly, and it's kind of a pain in the neck to have to switch them out and such like that. But anyway, it was just a thought. Because I think if you have two receivers and you have two external transverters, you most certainly can make that happen. So that would be the drawback of the internal transverter if it only allowed you one of those two bands at a time. Because my understanding is that the VHF-UHF transverter box was basically two independent transverters stacked together, but I don't know that for a fact. Alrighty. Anything else on software-defined radio from anybody?
I have a question for Jim, K2AMI.
Hey, Tony.
remember I was with you on field day, and we were looking at the Sophie Devine radio and observing some things. If you recall, that you would get a complete frequency spectrum on your computer screen, but when somebody transmitted with a relatively high power transmitter, the entire screen would be affected. In other words, the Sophie Devine receiver has a very broad band input. Obviously, the signal you're listening to, you can filter down. But you are affected by strong signals over the entire bandwidth that the receiver is listening to. And I wondered if we had to set the VHF contest, the fact that we do have some higher power transmitters, would this be a problem with the entire receiver spectrum being bouncing every time there was a high power transmission? As opposed to the weak signal that you were listening to. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, it could be interesting. It's going to require some experimentation. Of course, part of what we were seeing there was we were like, you know, 20 feet from another, how should I say, not exactly low power antenna. And surprisingly, there was a certain amount of descents and other interference. But, how true that is, you know, under all circumstances, I'm not sure. We'll have to play. And, yeah, it would be very interesting to try on two different VHF and UHF at the same time, see if you could do the simultaneous. I'm almost tempted to say yes, but I really, really don't know.
Okie dokie. Mr. Tony?
Let's cover the comments. My visualization is that the input of a modern-day transceiver has got a tuned input. And so if you're listening to one band, you're pretty much, or one narrow group of frequencies, your receiver is not paying attention to other frequencies. But that didn't seem to be the case with the software-defined display that we're looking at. It's a broadband receive. There is not input filters to limit you to what you're listening to, except after you've received it.
Not quite true.
Okay. So I think we're confusing things here. In the front end, you can have as much narrow-bandedness as you can reasonably expect. I mean, you know, tightening down below, let's say, you know, 200 kilohertz on HF, especially close at hand, is tough to do unless you take some extraordinary measures like we sometimes do during field day, where you have the CW station and the phone station on the same band. Having said that, you know, you can narrow down the front end, you know, fairly decently to include just the portion of the spectrum you want, and it most certainly could track, let's say, a piece of 40 meters or a piece of 80 meters or a piece of 20 meters. And it would be, you know, it wouldn't be 30 kilohertz wide. It might be at the front end a little wider. But, you know, even radios with the roofing filters, you know, have, you know, up convert to, like, you know, some ridiculous frequency, usually in the 70 megahertz area. Let me drop it. And that's how they get the narrow bandwidth, let's say 6 or 12 kilohertz or less. Having said that, with or without a roofing filter, you know, you can pass, or without a roofing filter, you can pass the front end. You can narrow the front end down as pretty much as much as you want using a varicap front end or some other technique. And then, you know, pass that passband down to a fixed IF, which is what you're doing. And that fixed IF is, you know, 0 to 192 kilohertz, let's say, for a Flex 5000. And across the firewire interface, and they present that for further decoding by your friendly neighborhood CPU in your computer. And so there's both front-end selectivity and back-end selectivity applied. That's the upshot of the whole conversation.
Mr. Kidd.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I was looking, unfortunately I didn't quite get to the page yet, but there is a band pass filter on the front end of each receiver in the 5000. So at least they break it down to, you know, the general ham band chunk on the receive side, and those are separate filters from the transmit band pass filters.
Yes, they are.
I presume we've got the 5000 or the 3000, I'm not sure which, but is there some way to operate this with an amplifier?
Oh gosh, yes. No, it's got all the normal amplifier control circuits that you would normally come to expect.
Of the 5000?
Yes. I'm looking to see if there is amp 1, 2. It's got the relay outs, PTT out, line out. It may not have the what is it, ALC return for essentially AGC purposes.
Looking at the attachment in the latest QST, the FLEX 5000 was HF 6 meters plus 2 meters and 70 centimeters, so I presume that's all in one box and you don't have any external converters with that particular model.
Yeah, that's correct, and there are three primary antenna, HF antenna connectors on this, on the 5000. And then there are separate receive antenna connections, and then there are separate connections for 2 meters and 440. So you can put separate permanently hardwired antennas on say 2 meters, 440, and HF all at the same time.
Very good, very good. I'm looking at that here on the top of the page here that shows quite a bit of. What the panel would be like if it was mounted on the thing that's actually a part of the monitor screen.
Yeah, and one of the cute things, there are actually 3 amp relay transmit outputs, as there are really 3 transmitters, 2 meter, 440, and HF.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, that is really cool. That is very, very cool. Isn't there, I don't have mine up in the shack right now, but isn't there also another way of having separate amplifier or keying outputs depending on which antenna you've selected as well?
Yeah, I haven't dug into it too hard. But you can, there's a whole mapping matrix where you can define what each, say, antenna path is. You know, for this path, this is the receive way, this is the transmit way, and, you know, various things. There's considerable flexibility.
Hey, 2ZC.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I think there's a utility program, DD Util. That'll get you the option of running a lot of different equipment and switching in and out amplifiers and stuff in different modes. You can do almost anything you want using that optional program. DDUtil is cool.
Yeah, DDUtil is that and more, actually. But yeah, that's absolutely correct. Nice toy, to say the least. Let's see. I'm just rummaging through my shack here. I found something just moments ago. So I've been thinking about the Noel's thing. We'll come back to this one later, but I have a a 14 volt DC relay that's got normally open 40 amp contacts, normally closed 30 amp contacts. And I have a socket and a pigtail for it. And I gotta tell you, based on the wires that go into the socket, there's just no way I would actually support that much current. But it certainly would be enough to isolate a battery from a charge circuit. So I might actually hook this in parallel with my ignition. Alrighty. Yeah, I'll have to get busy and check that out, the mapping. But there's a... You can set up any combination of port 1, 2, or 3 antennas, or the corresponding receive-only antennas ports as well in any combination, depending on what band you're on. It's pretty slick. I have a question, and I have to find the computer to see if it makes sense. But I have an old compact 6510. It's a Core 2 Duo T7250, 2 gigahertz machine with 2 gigs of RAM. If I lobotomize that machine, would it be decent enough for SDR?
K2Z6?
Dead?
Yeah, I think it could run something. You might get some latency. I'm running a two-core computer, AMD, and it's got 4 gigabyte of RAM, though. I get very little latency running my Flex 1500. In fact, running on a straight key, I really hear none at all. Once my speed gets up to like 20 words a minute, then there's a little bit. It can throw you off unless you use an external tone generator. But I think that would work. I even ran my Flex on my old computer, which was only... I think I only had 1 gig of RAM in it, and it wasn't a dual core. I forget the speed. I think it was like 1.7 gigahertz. So they're not too fussy, but once you get into the 5,000 or something, you're better off with a little more off. I've run some, the light stuff, the QRP stuff, so there's not much of a problem here. Back to you.
Okay. Very good. Well, I mean, my machine that I have here is a compact 6450. And that's a dual-core i5 2.4 gig machine with 4 gig of RAM. And it runs it just fine, but with all the corporate software crapola, it's sometimes annoying, to say the least. So what I wanted to do is take my old laptop, which I still have custody of, which is kind of cool, and see if I can, lobotomize it sufficiently to use just as an SDR platform. That would be my goal. So what I have to do first is I have to locate where the heck I put it, so I got the new machine, and verify that it is in fact what's in my company asset file. Because I've already noticed that the machine they have as my new machine is actually what they initially gave me and not what I actually have. So I had to deal with that. Alrighty. Anybody else?
William.
WA2CAI.
At least two, maybe three stations. Noel?
Okay. I was looking into the 2000, and I'm waiting for an open to buy from the XYL. A political thing. Anyways, it says you need at least a dual core, 1.9 gig. I think they recommended 6 gig of RAM. The big thing seemed to be the video card.
So I went to the website where the guy has computers that he's building, and it actually has a video card with a gig of memory, the Sapphire, Radon, I forget the exact number. Anyway, oh wait a minute, I got the box right here. it was 1 gig Radon HD 6750. So I just brought my computer up to 8 gigs of RAM with this. Samus, because you guys insisted on it. But I dual boot, so I have Windows Vista for myself and Windows 7 on the SDR, and there's nothing else, so I don't have anything to strip off. It's just got Windows 7. And, let's see, 8 gigs of RAM, and the recommended, it seems to be BioWare card. It's also a critical thing. It's got to have a TI chipset. Mr. Jim NS2K could expand it much better than I can. And 2OEO back to medicine.
Anybody have any follow-up to Noel? Okay, so the issue with the memory is this. Whether or not it has its own video memory or it's stealing system memory for the video. And it's not so much that it steals video memory, but when it does it, I mean the system memory for video, but when it does steal system memory for video, it prevents the CPU from using the memory for CPU functions. And I think that's the issue. And there's, you know, that you want to try to avoid that. So, anyway, that's pretty much where I was going with that. To answer a previous question, regarding Jim's software release, the current software is 2.2.2, and it has a couple of things that are very good. It has apparently fixed the CW first part of the first dip problem, I'll call it, and also I believe it also fixed the overshoot problem, or maybe the previous release did that. There was a little problem where you'd, on initial key up, you'd get a spike in power output. So if you're running a tube amp, it wasn't a big deal, but if you're running a solid state amp, you could actually overdrive the amp and distort, and people were concerned about damage. But no cases of that were evident, but you were for a fraction of a second throwing crap all over God's green earth in the way of RF, so you don't want to do that if you can help it. So that was the... That was that. Alrighty. Any more on this wonderful topic?
Okay, Suzette. The new program, the beta version, also has something called the tracking notch filter, which everyone seems to be raving about. I haven't loaded it yet. I more or less wait to see what the bugs are, and then I'll probably load the 2.2.2. I still have the 2.1.5, but this notch filter thing is supposed to be a big deal. So, back to that.
And I can assure you, it is a big deal. I was talking to Bob, WA2SQQ, who has been running it, and he is jumping for joy. And many of us have been waiting for that. So, yes. It is a big deal. Just a real quick point, Dave. Do you still find that you have, in the 2.15 software, you still have the initial dit loss or truncation problem?
You mean in CW? You mean like your first dit?
Yeah.
I really don't know, because I use Win Key most of the time for keying. And I add a little delay in it anyway, because sometimes I'm going into an amplifier, and I want to give the amplifier time to you know, transition.
Aha. Okay. Very good. So it's a non. Despite some belly aching in some parts, you're not having that problem for a couple of different reasons that you've engineered around. Very good. Anybody else?
You can also set your delay in power SDR, so it should be a problem there if you set it right.
That's correct. That is absolutely correct. So, go figure. But you know, some people are, they can't be satisfied unless it's, you know, plug and play. I did hear something interesting, from Bob, WHUSQQ, the other day. And he said that since he got his Flex, which was, I guess, a year or so ago, he would have had to, if he wanted to chase numbers or chase features and things like that, he would have had to have had three or four different hardware platforms read radios in that year and a half, 2 years since he got his, when they first, pretty much when they first came out, maybe a little later. And he is so happy that he bought a Flex because of its inherent, should we say, upgradability. He says, every couple of months I get new features on my radio. It's really, really cool. And it doesn't necessarily break. In fact, he said, that was the other thing. He says, I have yet to see something that I use get broken. So I thought that was kind of a cool item. All right. Any more on the topic? Well, I don't have transverters on my Flex, but I do have 6 meters, and my intention is to operate a little bit here, probably early Sunday morning, operate up at the mountain on Saturday evening during supper time and the like, and kind of go from there. And, we'll see. Gives me a reason to clean off the desk. What else? I have no more unless somebody else does.
Okay, 2ZZ. Have you interfaced it with any logging programs yet?
Negative, I have not. And that was the genesis of my question to Jim, and he has not either.
Oh, well, I'm interfaced to just about everything. What you have to do is get some virtual audio cables. There's no physical connections that you use for interfacing the power SDR, aside from your FireWire, in my case, USB. But you have to get virtual audio cables and virtual serial port programs. So I think the virtual serial port program you can get free off the internet. There is one person that gets it out for free. Virtual audio cable, you have to pay like $30, and then you have to downgrade. You can't use the one that's, I think it's the 4.10 that is the latest version, but they recommend you use the 4.09. So everything's explained in the knowledge base on the Flex Radio site. There's a lot of information there. It's kind of difficult to navigate the menu sometimes, but everything's there if you look hard enough. This is K2ZC.net.
Well, good, Dave. Thank you very much. That's pretty cool. Anybody else have any comments?
Different subject.
Hold 1 second, Mr. Tom. Anything more on the Flex or software-defined radio topic? Okay. Tag, you're at WHUCAI. WTTTK2BAR.
I just wanted to ask if any thoughts have been given to pre-wire antennas in the roof. Has anyone thought about doing that?
Dropped out in the middle of your transmission. Has anyone thought about antennas where in the roof?
A good spot on the right.
Good spot on the what roof?
The Red Cross vehicles we find ourselves involved with lately.
Most people have been using magnetic antennas, actually.
I heard that some of the roofs were plastic.
Good, JK.
That is true. But go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, Tom. One thing that I brought with me last Friday was I was going to ride with the guys from the Red Cross. I brought a cookie sheet so that and some duct tape. I was going to tape the cookie sheet to the roof of the vehicle if that was the case. However, we had a vehicle that has a metal roof, so it wasn't necessary. I don't know anybody that was riding in a vehicle like that. I wasn't sure just what vehicles were out there, but that was my solution for the problem. It didn't arise. Back to that W2KK.
Do we use the same vehicles over and over?
The rental car they had that I was riding.
Say again.
John, you fell out of the repeater for some reason.
They're saying it was a rental car that we were using over.
Did you get it locally?
I don't know. I think it came out of Philadelphia. It was a Red Cross guy who came from Philadelphia, and I think it was a Pennsylvania license plate, if I'm not mistaken. It was something the Red Cross provided. It was nothing to do with Barrow or the radio group.
Very good. How about DC power? Was that a problem?
No, as I mentioned before, this particular car was a Hyundai Elantra. It had two cigarette lighter outlets, one for their GPS and one for my handy-talkie. So that was no problem. And I was using a handy-talkie with the 5/8 mag mount, and I plugged into the cigarette lighter with my adapter cord. So there was no problem with that in that respect. Back to net, W2JK.
Okie dokie. A good question. You know, always making sure you have a way to screw an antenna onto a vehicle is tricky. I actually had an unusual situation recently, and that is I bought a magnet that had an ineffective magnet. So that was kind of, you know, a little squirrely. And it was brand new, so I have to contact the vendor about getting a replacement. Alrighty, last but not least, any comments? Alrighty, well thank you everybody. This has been a whole lot of fun. And we'll chat with you soon. And again, charge up your batteries, get your go kits all squared away, and make sure you hug somebody who probably needs a hug. Anyway, Godspeed, and remember September 11th. For those of you who VHF contest, it was yours truly before Barra fully got involved. I just want to say thanks for contesting on VHF contest weekend. In 1996, the September VHF contest, that Saturday morning I buried my dad 15 years ago. He had passed away earlier in the week after a struggle with cancer. And my wife and my children sent me to the State Line Lookout to contest. And that's what I did Saturday night into Sunday. And it was good therapy. I'll say that. So September 11th has always been it's been special for a lot longer than the last 10 years for me. And anyway, all good. 7-3 all, and have a good one. This is W2TTT for K2BAR, signing clear. 7-3.
Hello, Gordon. Gordon, what type of cancer got your father?
Basically pancreatic and then it metastasized all over the place. TTT clear, 7-3.
W2TTT into RBJ.
Kim into RBJ, speaking of people I used to contest with. W2TTT, are you?
Hey, Gordo. I'm just just hacking around here. I decided to dust off a few bits of hardware in anticipation of getting the troop up on Jamboree on the air.
Oh, excellent. Well, we were just having the tech net. We were talking about the joys and pleasures of a VHF contesting for this weekend.
Yep, I was going to use that to test a few things. I really want to get on 40 and 20 meters, but we're probably going to be doing it out from Rifle Camp Park, so I'm probably going to use a G5RV Junior, and I'll have to test that out a little bit before we get up there. I got a couple backup antennas, but I'd really like the boys to get some DXHF in there as well. It's easy enough to do the VHF, but I think they'll have a pretty good time.
Are you doing this just as a day event, or are you doing this as part of a camping trip up there?
Oh, it's going to be a very complicated weekend. There's open astronomy on Friday night, so some of the boys are going to go up for that. As you know, there are other boys that are in that sport, and they have this and they have that and stuff like that, so they can't do the Friday thing. Then Saturday is going to be a combination of orienteering and ham radio through the evening, and then staying over until Sunday morning, and then we break down.
You're going to stay in the park?
Yep, that's the plan. We still have to do a couple guys doing a recon about where we would like to set up. We could set up near the Nature Center, possibly, because that's also where electricity is. I'd rather not have to run a generator for the weekend, because we all know what a hassle that is. But we'll be staying near the lean-tos. That will be where we're camping. And so it might be, we might run the generators out at that site, or it really depends on, though, where I can find a couple of good trees for putting up the G5RV into RVJ.
Okay, couple of things. And this might require a phone conversation, but we can do it later. But let's just say you don't want any RF near the Nature Center up top, the observatory.
Okay, I'd rather not have RF near any building that I'm not in complete control of. As far as facilities go up there, I mean, they've got a nice 14-inch Celestron and a dark room and some other things. I used to belong to that club. But there's also a couple of bathroom facilities closed in winter, but they should be open. And at least one of them is electrified 24/7, so that might be another possibility. If worse comes to worse, I can get a generator, running and so forth. But then I have to maintain it. I've got to drill the boys on the extra level of safety required when there's a generator and extension cords running all over town and all that other stuff. So, and if worse comes to worse, I can run on battery power theoretically, but I can only get about 5 watts out of the 817. I wanted to run. I've got a Kenwood TS. 2000. I want to run that, running at least a little bit, a few more watts, and it's got an antenna tuner built in and a couple of other things. So, but that does not suit itself for running off of batteries, unless I got a bank of marine, deep cycles or something like that, which I don't have. So that's kind of a moot point.
Yeah. Okay. So you remember that club? So there's a county employee who worked up there, and when he was young and I was younger, I got permission to set up along the fence line north of that facility with my KW 2-meter amplifier and a 100-watt 6-meter transmitter with a friend of mine, and he was not happy that his seismograph had a very accurate chart recording of the transmit activity for the weekend.
Okay. And that was 6 meters, 8-check, or all of the above?
And two, oddly enough.
Okay. I can sort of understand that, depending on the age of the equipment. But, it's too bad. We'll see what's going on. Essentially, I've already published it. Oh, by the way, I grabbed W2S, which had been under previous ownership, and a few other people in between. So we're going to be using that for our call sign. Anyway, but my primary goal was going to be 40-20 and 2-meter FM, and maybe have 2-meter FM on a separate rig, because I've got a X500 that I think will, on 5 watts off of the 817, I think will be good. The boys will work on that for a while when they get, comfortable with it. They'll move over to HF. I really only have two boys, I think, that have actually worked HF under my tutelage, so it'll take a little bit get them acclimated. It should be an interesting weekend. If the weather looks really iffy and stuff like that, then I guess I'll just run it out of my house. Just because I have scheduled a Maribash, radio Maribash class to combine with this, and a lot of the boys that are going to be prepared are really going to need their QSOs so they can get their badge. So that's probably what I'll do. So you TTT into it.
Oh yeah. Well, what a lot of guys do in our world is grab a scanner, grab a handy talkie, tune across the bands, and they get their QSOs. Some are on HF, obviously. That's kind of cool too. But when I do this, I try to give them as much individual time as possible. But if they are, getting a little short, hand them a handy talkie and tell them where to look.
Yeah, I've done that. I have to admit, about half of my scouts who have gone through my radio course like that have ended up doing that. I'm even embarrassed to say that I once used a pair of cheap GMRSs just to get them through. So they could talk to each other, because it was handy and the batteries were charged. One thing I did that's been pretty useful is I put together a workbook, and the boys can kind of do that at their leisure, and that works out pretty well for summer camp. Depending on especially the older scouts, they don't take as many courses, or they take they've been through the hard stuff, emergency preparedness. And first aid and so forth, and so they're kind of looking for, they have a little bit more time in the evening, kind of hanging around and stuff. So that works out pretty well. I just wish that it'd be a little bit easier to get them as interested. One thing I haven't been able to do, I don't know, you can tell me your experiences there, but I haven't been able to get them interested in getting licensed. I said I'll get a class together for you, and we'll do that as a separate thing. And they go, well, I already have radio merit badges. Is that gonna, give me more merit badges? I said, well, no. You'll have an FCC license and a call sign. Wouldn't that be cool? And they just kind of, glaze over a little bit. I tell you, between the internet and mobile wireless, something like that, it's killing ham radio.
No, we just, all it takes is one other ham in the troop, and use it during troop operations. The next thing you know, the guys will be begging for it. They'll screw around with the FRS radios and find out, but those guys are communicating and we're not even hearing each other, blah, 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 blah. What I'm going to do is it's not a comprehensive list of everybody, but next time you're on QRZ, enter 07621. And look at the number of KC2 calls, and an amazing number of those are byproducts of our troop. And it's kind of neat. So
KC2ZPT, KC2ZPS, his son. Well, there's a bunch of Venture Crew 7373 ones, which are for various clubs, so I'll leave those alone. KC2YER, KC2WIZ, KC2, what do you call it, VBT, who's not part of our club, but he's part of the OEM. We got him licensed. KC2BBS, KC2BBR, who doesn't live here, he lives in the next town. KC2K, QDC, KC2SQV is my son James. KC2SQR was also not a member of our club, but our troop or crew, but he's we helped him. KC2OAA, KC2PWB, KC2NZC, and by the way, I see somebody here who's deceased, who needs to, that needs to be addressed. And there's a bunch of who don't live in town who are members of our troop and crew, so you get the picture.
That's pretty good. Where do you take them for the VE session?
Well, depending on how it's done, if they take it in my one-day course, then Don, if it's the Christmas to New Year's course, Don, W2JEK, brings the Barra crew. If it's the spring course, if I do a spring course, it's usually the East Coast DX Association. That would be Joyce Birmingham and company. If it's our Hamfest in the summer and our flea market, which is a kind of a Hamfest and flea market in December, it's probably going to be the 1070 team. That's who did it in August, and we had the Hamfest, which was successful, by the way, and the like. So that's kind of where we're going with that. So we basically invite various groups to come and do it just to spread the load around.
All right, that's pretty good. I might take you up on one of those one-day courses, and if it's any assistance, I'm also a VEC accredited examiner, so that might help with the load too. Because I know some of those sessions, I've run a couple of those, and just as a volunteer down in Nutley, and they get pretty hairy sometimes. And other times nobody shows up, so I'm sure they're always glad to, you know, have. It's always good to have lots of people want to take the test.
Okay, I can tell you that there will be a test session on December 10th, Saturday morning, probably at 9 in Bergenfield. I can also tell you there'll be one on Friday evening, December 30th in Bergenfield. The December 30th one will have the all-day course on Friday. It's the Friday between Christmas and New Year's. That's when we do these things.
That could be pretty good. December 10th is no good. That's our, we call it the urban hike. We go into the city or whatever and slosh around, you know, in our boots and stuff. But the December 30th for one-day Friday between the holidays, a couple guys like that, that might be good. I might start chatting that up. I'm going to see how much interest I can get with the guys who are going to be up at rifle camp and doing the operations side of it, too. Our first meeting is Monday because of Labor Day. We weren't able to meet last week, so I'm going to start chatting up radio a little bit more. I've been kind of letting it slide a little bit, just doing the merit badge. I think I can get them moving up to a new direction. We've also got a lot of older scouts who are kind of looking for maybe, like, you know, whatever is the next great thing. Into RBJ.
W2TTT. Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it, certainly. I think, though, that you'll find that that there's you really need to operationalize amateur radio in the midst of normal troop events, during your hikes, things like that. Make it available
sometimes it'll crash and burn, sometimes it will be great utility. But, you know, eventually, when one kid gets their ticket, and they're talking to you at the other end of a hike group, and the other guys start in, and it just becomes infectious.
Yep, I can understand that. So really, my job is to get the pump primed, and then we can go from there. I sent off a couple of guys. One of the guys is up at RPI, I got him interested in getting licensed. He wasn't that interested when he was in the troop, he did the Eagle, and you know, he was very active. He got three palms. Like, that's the only one I think we've given three palms to in a while, because he made Eagle early enough that he could meet the 4 month cycle. But once he got up there, though, he started hanging out with a couple other ham nerdy types. They got him interested, so yeah, he eventually got licensed. I think they have VE sessions like every other week up there too, so that makes a difference. I'm going to start processing myself. I think I'll get one more day of you know what. What else I'm going to do is I'm going to send you an email with the web page. I put together a little web page, just mostly so I could pass it on to the AWRL and get special event status and all that other stuff. And we probably should have a landline together and to see what we can do, because you have far more experience in actually getting these guys off their backsides to get interested in radio. But it's good to hear. I just casually tuning around, and I go, what repeater is this? Alpine? Heard your voice, and your voice always stands out. W2TTT into RBJ.
Yeah, I guess it does. We do this tech day on Thursday night every week at 9 o'clock. So feel free to jump in. We'd love to have you. That's a cool thing too. One of the things that I do, by the way, is I bring a few extra handy talkies for events, and so for the guys who don't have radios, I lend them, some of mine. And they're always very good about returning them. They really are. I mean, I've never had any issues like that. So it's certainly something to think about. So what else? But yeah, you prime the pump by just exposure. By the way, I use a workbook too. I actually edited the Word version of the Radio Merit Badge workbook to be amateur radio only, because we use it at Annapolis every year. I just have to reread it every time to make sure that we're on the same page, and it works out very, very well. Really, really does. So, anyway, it's pretty straightforward, but that's what you got to do, and it works out well. Anyway, I'm just trying to sort out what's going on here. Yeah, I guess this is all good. I'm trying to sort out my telephone bill to make sure that I'm applying my company discount to the correct phone number, because for mobility I do get such a thing, which is nice. Anyway, by the way, I did a corporate video today. I've never done one of those things, where those talking head corporation videos do rah-rah type stuff. I actually had to do one 7-minute talk.
Ah, very cool, very cool. Is that going to be open on the internet that I could watch it, or is that going to be strictly in-house?
I believe it's strictly in-house. It's not going to end up on the research site, although that would be a good idea, actually. Let me see if I can get some sort of snickering partner thing so it ends up on the research.att.com site. I don't know if they'd want to do that, but we certainly can look into that. But yeah,
I was asked to do when I was shocked, absolutely shocked. It's like, me? It's like, okay. I mean, what I thought was interesting is that the people who said I should do it had no idea that I stutter.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It depends on the situation, right? So you can take a work around that. But all right, well, yeah, I'd be curious to see that if it's out there legally and so forth. Anyway, and look for my email. I'll send that, you know, tomorrow or something like that to see what I'm doing. But as I said, we already got W2S and stuff like that. I passed that along to some of the adults. Go, well, that's a very short call sign. I said, well, that's the whole point. It's a special call sign for special people. And at least the parents' committee and stuff like that are getting into this. So all I have to do is get the scouts to follow it. So, 7-3, connect Gracie, and I'll talk to you soon. It's whoever's in.
Okay, yeah, well, that's the other thing. I've managed to get a couple of parents' licenses, and a couple more are pending. Before you go, can you spin up 146-835? And you don't need to worry about the PL. There's no PL on it, despite what it says. Can you spin it up real quick?
Okay, it's 146-835, and no PL, and is that a repeater? Is that standard offset?
Standard negative offset. You go ahead. I'll meet you there. You key it up.
Will do. Into RBJ. QSY.
Into RBJ W2TTT. W2TTT, I'm listening here if you're on 955. Yeah. KC2WRK, W2TTT. W2TTT.
Okay, to ETS Mobile, listening for me.
Thank you.
This is K2QBV Mobile. K2QBV Mobile, listening, repeat.
Thank you.